Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Another incredible artist comes on Last Resort Toys. He is killing it in his production, in his Kickstarter runnings, and all the stuff that he's got going on. I got to meet him at TagFest in September, and it was really cool just to be there and meet him in person and invite him on the podcast. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. You can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/ToysOnTap. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel at Toys on Tap. And if you want to support the show and get this podcast into more people's ears, all you got to do is like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It's free for you. It means the world for us. So let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Stuck with my usual setup. I just judged it a tiny bit to make it. I was like, I could go in my bedroom, but it was all weird. And I was like, I've got good art hanging and stuff in there, but you know, I've got toys at my left and right if I need to grab anything and talk about it.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I never expect the artist to have like a whole setup. I only do this behind me because I'm recording regularly. So,
well, I'm actually doing another podcast interview next month. Totally different thing, not a toy. Yes, but I've been thinking in my head, oh, I need to put together something for that. So I was like, oh, I can test it out here. But I was like, for toys, this is good, I think.
What's the other podcast you're going to do an interview for?
It's called The Commercial Break. Okay. It's an improv comedy podcast. It's quite popular. I looked up they've got like a good, I think I'm going to be their first listener guest, sort of talking about like the entertainment industry and stuff. But they've had guests on like Lewis Black and Reggie Watts, and like I'm entering a good guest list. Yeah.
Yeah, you are now as good, if not better, than Lewis Black.
Basically, I'd say a little bit better because I haven't had to step down from anything for being accused of anything. So.
Yeah, you're on it, dude. I'm so pumped. It was good meeting you at TagFest, and then getting it's funny when I meet artists and go to all these different things, I'll tell you about this list that I have that's just like ever growing. And it's funny because there's so many people that are on that list that I like from the toy community that I'm trying to get on.
Oh, your list of people to interview.
Yeah. And so you were on that list, and it was just happenstance that I ran into you that day at TagFest.
We probably talked about it. Are you local here? Are you here in LA?
I'm in San Diego.
Okay, cool. Local enough.
Yeah. So not too bad. But this episode is all about you, and I'm really excited for that. But before we get started, you have to do one thing for me. Introduce yourself. Tell everyone who you are and what you do.
Cool. Hi, I'm Brian Falk, and my company is Last Resort Toys. I make and design all the toys that I produce.
I love the toys that you've created and seeing them in person and the paint jobs, and then seeing the Kickstarter that happened earlier in the year and like all the cool things that have been going on. But to get to that point, we got to start back at the beginning. Tell me about growing up, the toys you had, the shows you watched. What was it like being a kid for you?
Sure. All right. So all the way back. Well, I was a Ninja Turtle kid.
Yeah.
I'm an 85er, so right in the slot for Ninja Turtles. Too busy with that for He-Man or Power Rangers, really. Although, you know, obviously all very closely in the same universe. But, so I was really into toys as a kid. Not so much as a collectible thing. I think I did have a bit of a collector's streak in me when it came to Trash Bag Bunch, which oddly enough, you know, full circle on that one in my life. That's kind of the first one I remember really like collecting, to the sense of like, of course I'd get my Ninja Turtles and you'd see the, you know, you'd see the eight figures on the back and I'd be like, oh, I want that one.
Yeah.
But Trash Bag Bunch was the first one where I was like, I'm gonna get all of these. And they were always buy one, get one free at KB Toys. And my mom, who is just awesome, has always been like, not that she's ever, I think, completely understood the weird stuff I'm into, but she never really like didn't support it or any or anything. But just I just say that because she would actually carry in her purse a little note card keeping track of which trash bag bunch toys I had for me. Oh. So she would help me. Yeah, so she would help me collect complete the set. And so we'll get to it later, you know, but when I the full circle of me coming to Trash Bag Bunch as the first toy I produced was kind of special on multiple layers. So yeah, and there were a few dark. I think that I was getting toys and excited about toys like Mighty Max and Attack Pack when I was into like second and third grade, when most of my other friends were getting into like sports, you know. And I remember having a specific conversation once with my buddy Joe, and I was asking. It was either Christmas or birthday or something, because our birthdays were close to each other. My best bud growing up, and I think it was Mighty Max. That was kind of new, or maybe series two or three was out. And I was like, oh man, are you asking for any Mighty Max for Christmas this year? And he, and not in any kind of way that was like, you know, knocking me down or anything, but he's just kind of like, nah, I'm not really too into that. You know, I think I'm just, you know, he's getting a baseball glove or something. And so there were a couple of years when I was, you know, into toys, maybe a little longer than the kids around me, but then there were some dark years. I refer to the dark years of the years of which I sort of like didn't do toys at all.
Yeah.
Which was maybe, maybe like fifth through eighth grade. And then what really kicked off the collecting and everything and seeing toys as art was in, I want to say, I don't know, I was 14 or 15 when I randomly came across Evil Ash from McFarlane Movie Maniacs series three, I think, if I got that right. Someone can at me if I mess that one up. And I was into Army of Darkness and Evil Dead as a kid. And like that is another kind of through line of my life that I'll probably circle back to in this conversation. And I was like, oh shit, like Evil Ash, this figure is super well done and super cool. It doesn't even look like a toy. And I was like, well, if there's Evil Ash, and this is before I was really just dipping my toe in to adult collectibles. So I was like, well, clearly there's already an Ash toy as well. I was like, I've got to find that. And so that year for Christmas, I was 14 or 15. I asked for a few toys, which I got Ash in the Pit Witch and Evil Ash and Blade from Puppet Master. And then the three or four first version of the NECA Beetlejuice toys, which were kind of shitty. The first ones they did. And that sort of kicked it off as me like seeing toys as art and sculpture and collecting. And I'll fast forward a little bit. I studied film and went to film school. Video production, really, not it was more the technical side than like the film studies side, although I did minor in that. And I was going to be a famous writer and director, just like every other student that's ever gone to film school. And you know, and I think this happens to most people, you know, some people know exactly what track they're on and they stick with that, but for me, art department wasn't a thing that had really ever been on my radar, because that's not something. You know, you can go to school for that, but it's not something that gets talked about a lot. And I started doing special effects makeup. Became very interested in that. There was kind of pre-face-off before that show popped off. And then that sort of all did along. And so it was becoming a popular goal for a lot of people. But so I moved out to Los Angeles from Ohio to pursue doing special effects makeup, but I was taking any art department job I could, and ended up working with some art directors and prop makers and stuff like that, and realized prop making, very similar skill set to makeup, but it's a little closer. Not that my goal was to make toys yet, but it's a bit closer in that area where, well, I mean, in a real way, you know, sometimes we're making things that are really very much like toys, but also there's a bit more permanence and staying power. You know, you rip the makeup off as soon as the camera's done, and then it goes in the trash, and that's fine, and that's like a temporary art unto itself. But prop making really suited me as very well, and I started cutting my teeth under some guys who had been pretty successful in toys in the 90s and early 2000s, and it had never really registered for me that, like, of course, that's a job too. And I was like, well, shit, I want to do that as well. It's all right to swear on your podcast, right?
Absolutely. But we have to pause there before we get into like professional toys. Two things. One, we have to like take a second and just brag about your mom and keeping track of those toys for you.
Sure.
That's crazy. I like most of the time people get on here and they're like, yeah, I had toys. My mom sold them all to yard sale.
No, that was never a risk. In fact, like, she knew, like, it was never even a concern. Like, yeah. Now I have all my Ninja Turtles when I was a kid, like, on a shelf.
Yeah.
But they were in a bag for years, like a big tote bag. And it was never even a concern of mine because she knew, even before I was like a collector and stuff, she knew that like those were special to me. And I didn't even yet know in what way they were special to me or would be special to me. But it was never even like a, oh crap, mom's going to get rid of my stuff. Like she knew not to, you know.
She's a national treasure and we're going to protect her at all odds.
Dude, I'll tell you what, like it hasn't stopped. Like this is almost embarrassing. I'm 39. But my mom's back in Ohio, and so I'm in LA and toy hunting out in the wild, you know, when you're going for like the stuff at Target and Walmart, which really only the only modern stuff I collect now is a little bit of Ninja Turtle stuff.
Yeah.
But back in Ohio, there's much less competition for people going to your Target than there is here in LA. Mm-hmm. And to this day,
meet Chum, the adorably deadly hammerhead shark creation from Pocket Salsa and Toys on Tap that has come from the depths to join your toy shelf.
Sharks! Take it out of the water! Sharks!
He can be found in the wild later this year in several different blank colors, and in some cases, rarer painted versions of Chum can be found. This chubby little guy comes in at 4 inches tall with 1 point of articulation.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
He is the perfect mix of cute and deadly.
I am never going back in the water.
Don't miss out on your chance to capture one of these little guys before they're gone.
My mom will still check with me if there's something I need. If she's like, hey, I'm going to be at a Target this afternoon. Is there anything you're looking for? And she will still to this day grab something for me. If I'm like, honestly, I'll send her a picture. Like, if you see this guy, if you could grab him for me, I'd really appreciate it. And every once in a while, she'll send me a pic and be like, found him. It's amazing. She's so supportive. And like,
yeah. Unreal. Yeah. Unreal. Unreal.
it's a nice relationship. We would honestly used to make days of, you know, when Hot Topic and Spencer's still carried McFarlane and NECA and KB existed and there was Media Play. I'm not sure if that was a national brand or not, but it was a huge store of hard media and they carried collectibles as well. That was how we'd spend our time together. That was my mom and I's quality time when I was, you know, in my late teens. It's not like I could drive. It's like I needed her to drive me. It was just how we spent time together. We'd take the day and go to Columbus, Ohio, and just hit up like 10 or 12 spots. I would look for the toys. We would stop for lunch, maybe dinner if we were there all day. And that was just, I've got really, really nice memories of doing that with my mom.
Incredible. So you grew up in the late 80s, 90s. I was born in 1990. So Trash Bag Bunch, I have no concept of that kind of a toy. Yeah. Tell me about that toy because it's going to really like fuel your later career.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So Trash Bag Bunch, series one, it came out in 91. It was from Galoob. And it may have been the first blind bag toy. Not sure if they were already on to that in Asia or not.
I'm gonna write that down so I can study for you.
Yeah. I think I've done a little Googling on that before, and I haven't found any evidence contrary to it.
Okay.
But yeah, the whole gimmick of Trash Bag Bunch, it was designed by Mel Bernkrant, and interjecting my own story. I licensed the toy directly from Mel Bernkrant, prolific toy creator, great guy. He lives in upper New York. Is that how they call it?
Yeah.
Anyways, he lives outside New York City, and I had the privilege of visiting him earlier this year as well, which has been on my list to do for a couple of years. He's getting up there. He's in his mid late 80s, but still quite spry. But had such a nice visit with him and sat around and ate tuna salad and drank gin. And he showed me his Mickey Mouse collection. He's got the largest Mickey Mouse collection of memorabilia in the world.
Yes.
Phenomenal. And we just sat and talked about toy art and some of his war stories. And I send him a couple copies of everything I make. That's part of our licensing agreement. And it was so nice and it wasn't, it was completely genuine. He was like, can I, he asked me if I could sign my toys that I've made that I've given him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had a few customers who were like, oh man, can you autograph it? Which always makes me feel a little bit like, I don't really put myself forward as like, hey, I'm Brian Falk, the guy behind Last Resort Toys. I'm a little bit of a background, but like my toys do the talking. And so it's cool because, you know, people recognize me as the artist of them. But there was something even more special about Mel asking me to autograph my toy that I made for him. And so I licensed directly from Mel. Mel still retains the IP to that, which was, so we're going back to the 80s and 90s when toy companies would license an idea from a creator, rather than nowadays, if you take an idea to Mattel or Hasbro and they want that idea, they're most likely going to buy you out. They're like, here's, I don't know, here's a lump of money, $100K, whatever they offer for that kind of thing. Yeah. But we have the entire idea. It's ours now. And so I was lucky in that regard as well that I met Mel, that Mel had the license, that it was that kind of license. And we got to talking, and I asked him if he thought it'd be cool to, you know, if I tried to do something. And I pitched the idea basically of Trash Bag Bunch XL, taking the original toys and expanding them into a larger size, more scale. And he thought it was a great idea. And after he saw my first two sculpts, which was Muckoid and Lice Plant, so like we did have an approval process, but he basically saw my first two toys and he loved them and said he was super, he could tell that I cared about them a lot. And he basically just gave me, I still pay him all the royalties and everything, but he sort of gave me free rein to just go to town at that point, just sculpt them at the way I see they need to be sculpted, produce them the way I need to see that they need to be produced. Which was also cool to be given that trust and freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's and incredible. So,
yeah, thank you. Thank you. And also go back real quick to Trash Bag Bunch. The toy gimmick was it came in a little dissolvable trash bag. So you'd buy, it was on a card back with a bubble, just like most toys, but you couldn't see the toy you were getting. And then you would take it home, rip it open, drop it in some water. Works better if it's warm. And there's like a little tab of Alka-Seltzer or something that fizzes inside the bag. And the bag dissolves a bit and gets sort of slimy and it bubbles. And then you pull your toy out and you reveal your Trash Bag Bunch figure.
That's awesome. I thank you for sharing about that. That's super cool that you worked with the actual person. I think that one of the greatest parts of this, of the toy community at large, is that there is, because we all grew up with these toys, there's this desire to like bring those people with us, and like,
yeah,
if we can work with them, it becomes a highlight for our lives, and it's amazing to be a part of it.
Yeah, well, I think another good example is like James Grohman and Tim Clark.
Yeah,
not that either of them ever like stopped being an artist, but I'd say for probably a good 20 years, and I could be completely wrong about this, you know, they sort of dipped out of the eye of collectors and stuff. But then as people like you and me came into our 30s and 40s, we're like, who were those artists that made that, that made Boglins and Mad Balls and My Pet Monster, and I think that some of those guys are even now having a renaissance of their own. I know James Grohman is going wild doing really cool sculpts for Mondo and stuff. Yeah, sort of circling back on people who are like me, who are now producing toys, and you, who's got a toy podcast, you know, we want to bring those people with us and honor the work they've done, and a lot of them are still working, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, what's cool. And so you're, if we go back to where we were, you're kind of like working underneath some of these producers of toys that were in the toy community back then, or whatever that would have been like. So take me back to that point and let's go forward from there.
Yeah. So I was working in art department stuff, learning how to sculpt and mold making and all this stuff under some guys who were in the toy industry. And my one buddy, Digger Mesh, doesn't scratch under the surface a little bit, and you'll see his toy stuff. He designed Mini Mates, and his toy company was Art Asylum in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. There's, you look up, I think there's a Toy Fair. What were the two toy magazines that were around in the 2000s? There was Toy Fair and one other one.
Toy Fair was the only one I ever tried to get my hands on.
Yeah. There were two. Yeah. Anyways, he's on the cover of one of those. Nice. From the early 2000s when they're promoting. Art Asylum, and he was doing like Rob Zombie toys and stuff like that. But there's this funny photo of him with his long hair and his sunglasses, and it just says Digger Mesh, the bad boy of toys.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And he's still a really good dude. I actually just last year took a life cast off his hand. I'm doing a toy. Well, here we go. Should I drop a little toy news?
That's what I'm talking about. This is what it's for.
So I've told some people this in private, but Skinner, the artist, he's got a new mat. He's got this anthology out.
Awesome.
Called Skin Crawl. And so the host, he's got two issues out. He's done Kickstarter. Definitely check him out. Hope he does more. Really, really cool stories, cool art. But the host of the magazine, in sort of a Tales from the Crypt way, is this haunted hand called Raleigh.
Nice.
Yeah, and so Skinner and I have been in touch, and we're going to do an official Raleigh vinyl toy. But for the base of it, and not that I couldn't start from scratch, but for the base of it, I'm going to cast the clay into a mold of Digger's hand.
Mm.
One, because he's a big dude with a big hand, and it'll be a good place to start. And I'll dig into it, and it'll look super gnarly. It's not going to look like a real human hand. But I kind of thought that was funny. You know, my buddy Digger, he's got some toy history. He's going to be the base for the Raleigh figure I'm doing for Skinner, and just a little fun extra
awesome.
Layer to that.
Yeah, I like that it adds it, and it only adds it for the people that really, one, that listen to Toys on Tap, but also for the people that really know what's going on.
Yeah. So he was one of the guys that I was like, oh yeah, like toys are a career. Like I should do that too. It's not like I thought I should shift, but I was like, I need to do that as well. You know, makeup, props, toys. So met some guys from Sideshow. Digger was working for them, and like immediately that became, I was like, oh man, I want to sculpt a statue for Sideshow. That never did happen. A lot of that has to do with things going digital, which we can get to that later. But yeah, so between a couple guys I knew and started to feel inspired by them and maybe the potentials, I think the first thing I did, I mean, so the first thing I did as a fan was I sculpted a head sculpt of Ben Temple Smith's Wormwood figure.
Okay.
And I.
An Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
And that was maybe even the first mold I made as well, learning, you know, doing that on my spare time at this film internship I had.
Yeah.
Internship. They use the word internship in LA to mean free labor.
Yeah. Or slave. That's a good term. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like it's really an abused term around here because it's supposed to mean, you know, internship actually has a legal definition where you're getting something in return.
Yeah.
Usually education. But which I was getting education, but not in any official capacity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like a 1/6 scale head sculpt. Didn't really plan too far ahead on how it was attaching to bodies, but I actually sold several of those for like 20 or 30 bucks a piece, which was super cool. People were paying money for my artwork. And so this was before, so Walking Dead was already a comic book, but this was before it was a TV series. Into comics, and in the back of one of Robert Kirkman's other titles, Battle Pope, which was drawn by Tony Moore, was the design for a Battle Pope statue that was never produced. And I was like, oh my god, that's so cool. This is a random character, nobody's doing that. So I got in touch with both Kirkman and Tony Moore somehow. Don't even remember how. I feel like that'd be really hard to do nowadays, to randomly find that information on my own. And I was like, hey, like can I do this, and then can we maybe try to get it produced? And they were like, sure. So I sculpted it. It honestly took me, it's incredibly complex, especially for a first sculpture. It's, I don't know, 18 inches tall or so. It's got two full figures, and the base is four half demons. Very dynamic.
Yeah.
It's got organic stuff. It's got mechanical stuff. It took me a year to make it. And I could do it much faster now. It would be better now. I would do it differently now, but I'll tell you what, like, talk about like baptism of fire, just learning as I'm going. And luckily I had a few guys around me, like Digger. I remember one time, you know, I'm figuring out anatomy while I'm doing this as well. And I remember one time Digger's walking past me at the workshop we were at, and he points out, like, it was a bicep or a pec or a thigh or something. He's like, oh, that's all wrong. And he just, like, takes the tool out of my hand and, like, draws on my sculpture. He's like, yeah, your muscle's too sinewy. You got to bulk it out here and there. And on one hand, you know, I was like, oh, it's my sculpture. You're touching my precious sculpture. But on the other hand, he was absolutely right. Mm-hmm. You know, he's showing me some guidance. And so, yeah, that never did get produced. Tony. And so I think I think I was kind of counting on, and this is not me saying anything bad about Robert Kirkman. But I think I was maybe counting on him and his growing popularity of being able to get this off the ground, because I'm nobody.
Right.
And at this, it was this same moment in time when Walking Dead became a TV show, mm-hmm. and it just became an absolute pop culture juggernaut. And the email responses kind of tapered off and stopped after a while, which I understand, you know. I'm some kid in California trying to produce a statue of an fairly unknown comic book. And then this guy's got a huge hit. And he's like, am I going to spend time producing this statue from a 10-year-old comic book that people don't read? Or am I going to spend time on this multi-million dollar property that I have made now? And so that's all fine. But that's sort of the beginning of a series of some false starts that led to me starting Last Resort Toys, my own company. I'm doing this now. I'm trying to find other things to do. I'm contacting companies and stuff that I like, or properties or comic book artists, saying, hey, like, I'm an independent artist trying to get into this stuff, and nobody really bit. Fast forward, I'm doing prop work. I'm you know, I'm on sets and all that, having fun. I'm doing some toy stuff in the background just for myself. And so this, how old would I have been when this happened? 2000. So I'm probably 25-ish, 26 when, again, Digger, calls me up and asks, he's like do you know who Kevin Eastman is? I was like, yeah, of course I know who Kevin Eastman is. He's like, we're doing an art show at Meltdown Comics. He's like, come, do you want to come help? I was like, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm such a Turtles fan, and Digger didn't really know, and he's like, oh, you are a Turtles fan, like here you go. Am I a Turtles fan?
Maybe. Holy geez, the arcade in the background, and the original arcade,
casually talking about Turtles.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so I helped Kevin and Digger for about a month, 30 days, put on an art show. It was for the first series of IDW Ninja Turtle comics. And Kevin was heavily involved in the first several issues. Mm-hmm. So we were hanging up art for that. It was heavy metal stuff. And also he was that was when he sold off his entire office. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember that.
We moved his office from his home and recreated it in Meltdown Comics and auctioned it off. I could be completely wrong about this. I think somebody from NECA won the auction for it.
Okay. No one's going to fact check you, because this is good.
Yeah. I mean, I think the facts are out there if you want, but it's somebody from a company, somebody involved with pop culture.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so for 30 days, and again, this was like, I didn't need to be paid at all for this. Like, I was happy to be around. It was Kevin. I hung out on the roof of this comic book store with Kevin and Mark Bodie, Von Bodie's son also, but Mark also an artist unto his own. I'm hanging out on the roof of this as they are painting a giant mural of the first issue of Ninja Turtles. And I'm like grabbing them coffees, and Mark is like, oh, hey, Brian, we're out of black paint markers. Can you go grab some more? And I was like, absolutely. So I'm running out and getting stuff. And it's really a surreal moment for me as I'm 20, 24, 25, kicking it with, you know, a real, I don't know if hero is the right word. I don't really like to think of people like that, but a real inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, someone who created, I also oftentimes draw lines between creators and their creations. And sometimes you have to, it's, you know, like, well, Evil Dead, circling back to that, I ended up working on the Evil Dead TV show.
Yeah.
And not to get too into the weeds, but Bruce Campbell's not a great guy to work with. And I had to have a moment where I was like, okay, Bruce Campbell is an actor and a creator, but he is not Evil Dead.
Right.
You know, I had to do a quick separation in my head to not ruin the thing for me. So anyways, yeah. I get my point of, I guess, like not trying to do hero worship, but respecting creative artists. And so hanging out with Kevin and Mark, super cool experience. And then my buddies work. I've got a friend who with this when 3-0, the Hong Kong toy company that does a lot of Transformers and anime stuff, and they were a company with 3A, which was Ashley Wood's toy company, which is now Underverse, but that's they were, you know, partnered with 3A or 3-0. They were doing my buddy, who is a product manager or licensing manager or something at 3-0, told me, he's like, hey man, we're doing they were doing the Michael Bay turtles in that movie, but yeah which terrible designs. in my professional opinion, obviously no one came and asked me my thoughts on those turtles, or else they wouldn't have had noses.
They should have asked you.
They should have clearly they messed that one up. But my buddy was like, hey, we're also talking to Kevin, we're going to do Kevin Eastman designed turtles. And I was like, oh shit, like, this is an opportunity, I need to do this. And I was like, dude, if I talk to Kevin and like he wants me on board, like, can we make this maybe happen? And he's like, sure. So, and this was actually at Comic-Con at San Diego. And so I went over and found Kevin. I was like, oh, hey man, and you know, we've got a good relationship at this point. And I brought up the turtles. He's like, yeah. I was like, dude, like, I would so love to get involved and sculpt these. Like, I will put more into this than I think any other artist would. And I was like, and basically so Kevin did bring me on. And that project, fast forward a few months, I was like, this is it. I've made it. I bought myself this $500 sculpting table right here.
Yeah.
Which I still use. But it cranks up and down. It holds up to like 250 pounds. And I was like, I deserve this. I'm sculpting Ninja Turtle toys now.
Yeah.
Treat this $500 table. And the project got canceled for various reasons. Pre-orders. It was all, you know, bureaucratic reasons, looking for a bigger company. The company gave me another crack with some other toys that were never produced. I'm allowed to say what they are. I posted pictures once. They had the Ray Harryhausen's Ray Harryhausen license. So they tossed Kali from, I think, the seventh Voyage of Sinbad my way. None of those toys ever got off the ground either. And then another false start. So we've got Battle Pope, we've got Ninja Turtles, we've got Harryhausen, and then the fourth one, which I was like, okay, this is going to be something, was for PCS, Pop Culture Shock, which is now Premium Collectibles something, I think.
Okay.
They were doing a series of 1/3 or 1/4 scale Masters of the Universe figures, and I got tapped to do the just the base, but it was a big gnarly rock texture with skulls and plants base for Skeletor. Another project that got canceled.
Big, you know? and these are huge IPs.
Yes, yeah. And they're getting canned, not for any reason that has anything to do with anything besides like money, bureaucratic type stuff, you know. And I'm at the bottom. I mean, I'm sculpting the stuff, but I'm really at the bottom of the hierarchy on the list. I'm not making the decisions, you know. And for some of these things, I got paychecks. For some of these things, I didn't. And that's great. But as an artist, it's not always about the paycheck. It's about, you know, I spent time on this thing of birthing this thing. I wanted out in the world. And this was over the course of a few years, you know, that these series of things happened. It wasn't just 6 months or a year. And I remember I was out for a jog, getting in some exercise. And I was thinking to myself, just thinking about toys and a bit frustrated. And I remember saying to myself, if I'm going to be able to do this toy thing, I just wanted to make toys. You know, I didn't really need to be working for the biggest company or whatever, but I said to myself, if this toy thing's going to work out, maybe my last resort is to start my own business. And that's when I came up with the name Last Resort Toys.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of a personal history in the name of that. And I don't want to tell that story and it sounding like desperate. It's not last resort desperation. It was more of me persevering, I would say.
Yeah.
And
tell me about the logo for it. Because when I look at the logo for Last Resort Toys, it's the bomb that's dropping.
And it's obviously Doc. And I like the imagery. Obviously, it's Dr. Strangelove.
Mm-hmm.
I cartooned it up a bit with robots because I like robots.
Yeah.
I drew a lot of times for my, I'm not a good 2D artist. So a lot of times I will draw a real crappy version of what I want and send it to one of my graphic designer friends who I know can capture my style.
Yeah.
Kevin Ivers goes by Amish. Yellow Brick Effects. I'll give him a shout out. He's the guy that does most of my graphic design. Fellow prop maker.
Yeah. The logo looks like, I mean, it has the reference to Lovecraft, all that stuff, but it looks like, if you're in a scenario like this, your last resort is to drop this last bomb.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Honestly, that didn't even click for me until I think I had that logo in the name for a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say I would do anything different, but like, my intent is not any kind of like nuclear war messaging. Cause like there truly is like, if without making a very far leap at all, you can truly look at my logo and name and be like, oh, last resort, nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
Like the two, even though they can be so obviously linked. That was not a conscious decision that I came to in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
The logo and name were separate, but are, you know, obviously quite linked if you want to make that leap. But here on the record, I am I'm not pro war.
There we go.
Not pro nuclear bombs. You can put that on the record.
You heard it here. Pro toys, no bombs.
Exactly. Pro toys, pro robots, pro nuclear power, not nuclear
war. I'm gonna splice it up where you just said pro nuclear bomb.
There you go. Do it. Just get me canceled, man.
Yeah. So you are starting this off of these like four false starts and you are crushing it like now, but not every toy thing starts out just crushing it. So tell me about the first beginnings of Last Resort Toys.
So I need to go back a little tiny bit before Last Resort. So sometime in all this mix, I did get my first toy produced and shout out to George Gaspar. Double G Toys and his company, which is no longer functioning, but October Toys. They did a really cool set of minifigures. They had four series called OMFG, which stood for Outrageous Minifigure Guys. And I sculpted one of their toys for the third series, 10 Can, a little minifigure. Do I have any of those sitting around? I do, right here. I did not plan this.
Here we go. Let's see it.
This little DJ here.
Oh, he's great.
From the third, a little tentacle trash can guy, very playful.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
And so that was my first toy that was officially produced. So that was super cool. And And I had a bunch of other minifigure sculptures from doing that. And so the first thing, this isn't the first thing I produced personally, but the first thing I made and thought about producing was my minifigure series, Runamucks.
I will tell you that my favorite thing about doing toy interviews is what's happening right now, where you like, let me go get that. Because I might cut it out for the interview and no one understands the joy that you see when people are like, wait, I got that.
Great. And you can, yeah, you can see the avalanche I just caused on my floor right there.
But, casualty of war. Yeah.
So here's my six figure set of minifigures called Runamucks. And, I definitely just got to give the nod to George and October Toys for, I'm basically have the same model for those as that they used, which was, and I think it's such a good way of getting different character designs of base. So each one of these is designed by a different artist. I sculpted them all. I designed the snowman, and then the other five are from different artists. So they're all through the filter of my sculpture, but they were all designed by different artists, which is such a cool way to get an eclectic group of little creatures and monsters that they would have never come out of my head. I would have come up with other things.
Okay.
So I sculpted all of those. And so that's when if you go to the very, very first blog posts on the Last Resort Toys website, they're about these toys. They did not get produced for another 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
So let's see. Let's jump to, I want to do something. I want to make a toy. And I'm trying to figure it out. I'm like, okay, I've got to make a toy. Like it's burning. It's like burning a hole in my brain and my soul. And that's, and I honestly can't remember the exact how it happened. I think I got in touch with Mel Bernkrant, not in order to make toys, but simply as a like gesture of paying my respects almost, of saying, oh, Mel, hey, my name's Brian Falk, huge fan of what you've done. Just wanted to say thanks for your work. You know, it was probably a bit longer than that, but and then he responded and was like, oh, it's so nice to hear from a fan. He was very hard to get in touch with at the time. I had to do some internet sleuthing to find him, and he wasn't surprised that I did. I actually had to get his contact info through a journalist, I think, and the journalist checked with him first before giving my info, but he was like, yeah. And we got to talking, and he somehow just mentioned, I think, still having the license, or maybe mentioned, you know, that was the day back in the day when they would license from the creators. And that's how I was like, we just got to talking, and that's sort of when I pitched in the idea, and he said, yeah, let's go. So I spent 8 or 9 months sculpting the figures. I had never had any social media before this, no Facebook, no nothing. And I was like, okay, I have to take that leap. So all my social media is under my company name. I don't have any personal social media. But I was like, if I'm going to do this, I need to make a presence. I need to get some attention. So I spent 5-6 months sharing toy stuff, sculpting work in progress shots, process stuff of Muckoid and Lice Plant, all leading up to launching a Kickstarter for the toys. First Kickstarter went well. So much work. I think I've done six or seven Kickstarters now. There's so much work.
We got to pause. Six or seven?
Yeah.
I've
done three Trash Bag Bunch Kickstarters, a Runamucks Kickstarter, and three Space Creatures Kickstarters.
All funded?
Yeah.
That's...
I don't like. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I'm not doing like $50,000 or $100,000 campaigns. My biggest one was $18,000. My Runamucks was 14, and my Space Creatures are usually eight or ten around there. Which isn't everything I need to produce the toys. I truly shoot for because Kickstarter is all or nothing. You can always get more, you know. And this is the advice I've had several people come to me asking me advice for their own Kickstarters, and one piece of advice I always say is, don't ask for more than you actually need. And if you can, ask for a little less, because if I put my own money into projects all the time, And some people are afraid to or unwilling to do that. And it's also, you know, a bit of a privilege to have a spare $1,000 to toss into a toy project. You know, these are effectively luxury items. Nobody needs an $80 to $100 toy. You know, that's a luxury to be able to buy those things.
Yeah.
But what I recommend to people is, because I've seen some people, toys and otherwise, I've seen people let Kickstarters fail so close to the goal. And their mindset was, well, people didn't put in the money. And I'm like, man, if you're not willing to invest a little bit in yourself, you can't expect other people to invest in you. You know, so what I recommend is either putting it at the absolute minimum of what you need or going under a little bit, hoping that you'll go over, but being willing to then close the gap yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if I need 10K to produce a space creature toy in the factory, I'm only asking for 8, hoping I get more, but knowing that, okay, if I get 8, that's enough for me to start. Mm-hmm. Knowing that I'll close the gap myself. But what's better, getting 8 and needing 10 or needing 10 and not getting 8?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That might have been a bit convoluted, but so anyways, yeah, Kickstarters, they're a ton of work. It's all the prep that leads up to it, but then also, you know, basically pestering people for 30 days mm-hmm. without trying to be too annoying, keeping the content, because essentially you're just saying, give me money, give me money, give me money.
Yeah.
I mean, you're also saying buy my stuff. So it's an exchange, but also, you know, I'll tell you what, for the 30 days I'm running a Kickstarter and I'm promoting it on Instagram, those posts get so much less traction. And I think it's a combination of, you know, a lot of my supporters probably like, cool, I've seen it, I've backed already, whatever. And, you know, and it's not like they're annoyed, I don't think, but also I really think that on Instagram, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure this is true, that they throttle posts that are promoting other things. If you use the words like store, for sale, website, Kickstarter, GoFundMe, I truly believe that the algorithm throttles the exposure that those posts get.
And Instagram has its own, the second they put their own shop on there, and the second they were like, you could buy products straight through us, it immediately put a throttle on everything selling.
Yeah, it made it really has become difficult to be a business and promote art and art for sale on Instagram. I barely use Facebook. It's sort of a carbon copy of my Instagram. And also, that's another thing, like, I do everything. I do my website, I pack and ship my orders, I talk directly to the factory. Doing the social media is just a part of it, but like, it's like, you know, I should be spending my time sculpting toys.
Right.
I wish more than anything I had somebody to do all the other stuff for me. I'm an artist. I'm not a super strong business minded person. I ask for a lot of advice and input when it comes to those things. But anyways, I was just going to say about the Kickstarter, I'm winding on paths here. What was I saying?
How difficult it is to run it. It just takes a lot of time. They throttle.
Yeah, maybe that was about it. Just that I've done 7 of them now. I've got a bit of a method to it. But part of the difficulty again is just keeping that exposure and not getting. I have a newsletter which I found to be important, and I just say to people like, hey, like, I only send out 2 or 3 a year, usually for important things. So if you don't want to miss out on a release or a Kickstarter, because sometimes people will be like, Instagram hasn't shown me your stuff for 6 months. I forgot you exist or whatever. And that happens mm-hmm. to me all the time as well. But Kickstarter is a great platform. You lose about 10% off the top. But you know, you're always paying payment processors or websites or store envy or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, so you got to plan. There's a lot to plan for.
That is, it's great. So from the point you start, when does Last Resort Toys launch? When is that start date?
Right, so effectively that is back in, Arguably, there's two. There's two start dates. The first one was in 2012 when I had a website with my logo and the name, all as it is today. Mm. And I'm saying, hey, check out these Run Amok minifigures. But I would say the real launch was then 5-6 years after that, when I skipped ahead to Trash Bag Launch and came out with the social media. And this was late 2017 and into 2018, I believe, is when I started the social media accounts under the name. And I said, hey, I'm going to be producing these toys, working towards a Kickstarter campaign, and really did actually, you know, follow through and was able to execute all of that.
It's crazy to think that, I mean, grand scheme of things, it's older than most of the indie toy companies, like starting in 2012-ish or around there, like 12 years. If you move forward, 2017, 2018, still older than a lot. Like a lot of them came after that. And you've run successfully. You garnered enough support in that amount of time to run successfully so many Kickstarter campaigns because people believe in what you do, your skill set, and all of that. So that's just an incredible, like, that's a short amount of time and an incredible amount of work all slammed together.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
And so, wow.
And I remember my first designer con, which I think was DCon 18.
Okay.
I was just able to get a handful of blank and glow-in-the-dark lice plant and muckoid figures, not in their boxes, but just in poly bags. They come in boxes now, sent over just in time for the first decons. That's all I had. I had a pretty piss-poor setup there with just a few toys on the thing. And not in an insulting way, but I remember another vinyl toy guy said to me, where did you come from? You sort of came out of nowhere. Which I think a lot of artists, I think you hear about people hearing that with musicians a lot, where all of a sudden there's a musician that seems to have popped up overnight, but it's like, no, they've been hustling for fucking years, and that's the reason you're now hearing about them. Nothing happens overnight, you know?
Yeah, that is crazy. And I think you walk down DesignerCon, which, love going to DesignerCon. Are you going this year, by the way?
I am not as a vendor. That was a bit of a, I was debating for a long time. It really just comes down to my costs. I'm a local, I'm in LA, so I would commute basically, save a lot of money. It's an expensive con. And I think that just with my finances, to be honest with my finances now, basically doubling the cost to go to Vegas. Mm-hmm. And I'm literally looking at the money to go there as what I want to spend on producing a couple toys. I'm working on a new set of Halloween figures, which I can show you if you want to see.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I could spend a couple grand going to DCon and trying to break even on that.
Yeah.
Or I can put that straight into production. So I'll probably go over and hang out on Saturday.
Yeah.
Just to see everybody. See all the friends. And are you going to go?
Yeah, flights are super cheap from San Diego and from LA. So it's like I fly in. I just got my tickets. I fly in. I land at like 9 a.m. I leave there at 5 p.m. So it's like we're there in and out. What's crazy.
I didn't even think about flying. I'm just like, oh, I'll drive. It's 3.5 hours.
I like
a nice road trip. So,
OK. I mean, because it'll be one day. And I'll just take a bag to bring back stuff that I undoubtedly will buy, or a bag full of toys that I'll take with me, which is such a crazy thing for a grown man to say.
Too much. If we meet up, you can, and I'm there, you can put stuff in my car and I'll drive it back to LA if that needs to be done for any reason.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, back on your podcast and you've got yourself a toy mule.
Toy mule is crazy.
Real quick, do you mind if I pour another coffee?
Yeah, pour another cup of coffee. I'll talk to you while you're pouring a cup of coffee. What's crazy, like we bring up DesignerCon and we talk about how the comment of you might have just popped out of nowhere, which that we understand what they're saying, but when you walk down DesignerCon, these aisles and these people that have been grinding and grinding and grinding, and for some, they've had success immediately. For some, they're still trying to get success. However we deem success, I don't know. Especially in toys, it's tough. But for you to come out and just like start producing like a madman and like have these things funded, people supporting it, I get why they would say like, wow, you came out of nowhere. And I think what that really speaks to is like, man, you are a talented guy that is rushing it.
Oh, well, thanks, man. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I think that also in that vein,
yeah,
I think I'm one of the first indie guys, real indie guys, to do like full printed window box packaging with vacuform trays and stuff.
Okay.
Because I remember that was another thing that got, and I didn't have that at DCon just yet because that was coming with the rest of my toys. But I remember that was another thing that sort of caught people's attention. And there's several other people that are doing it now, some of whom contacted me and asked how I did it or who I got it to done from. And I'm happy to share that info. I don't like gatekeeping, you know, but yeah, I do think that was something special I did, which I didn't realize at the time. I just wanted to come out with a nice presentation, you know, and that's so I box my trash bag bunch figures. Most of my other stuff is poly bag, but yeah, I wanted to come out of the gate strong and swinging. So I put a bit more money into that, you know, basically paying for most people to put something in the recycling bin, hopefully, but a lot of people really like to keep the boxes as well. So that's
yeah. Cool. In your grind and toy career up until this point, you've done conventions and all kinds of things, which I mean, you'd be able to speak to this. It's probably hit or miss. Some years it's like, this is great. Some years it's like, I just paid for a lot of advertising. And so like, yeah. It's one of those. Tell me, I saw you at TagFest about a month ago. Tell me about TagFest, because that's a smaller type thing through Toy Art Gallery. And it's, if people haven't been there or heard of it, it is legit in an alley and
yeah.
not giant. It's a funny thing. I went back where you were, Neil and Scott. So I was in that, like, that was my corridor for, God, the whole hour and a half I was there. And I didn't keep walking because I was like, oh, I want to talk to these people around me. And then Scott was like, it doesn't go far. Like, that's the end. It doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, like, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me how you got into TagFest as a another, I don't know what you'd call it, show, convention, whatever. How'd you get into that?
I guess, yeah. They invited me. You know, I think we might have crossed paths at Five Points Fest in New York.
Okay.
And Tag is a local LA thing. A literally 15-minute drive for me to get there, which is pretty cool for a convention, because normally I'm, you know, driving for days or taking flights. So it's really cool to do the local stuff, and I'm so happy to be plugged into the small con scene around here. There's also Kaijufornia, which was like 2 weeks after that. A lot of the same guys at TagFest. Did you stop in at that one?
No, I had planned to, and I was getting ready to like go see everyone. And then I had a work trip that came up and
Well, even Monster Patrol was even doing an event the same day down in Little Tokyo. Yeah. But anyway, sorry to get back to TagFest. Yeah, no, they invited me as a local artist, and it was super cool to see the other guys there, like Scott. And I'm glad Neil came in. Neil's one of my good con buddies. We usually try to grab a meal or something if we're at a con together. And so TagFest specifically really focuses on Sofubi, Soft Vinyl stuff, and also specifically custom paints of that stuff. So I did a lot of paints on my custom on paint on my Space Creatures series to bring to that. And it was cool. It was great. They had a DJ and a food truck, and there were vendors there, mostly people selling, mostly creators selling their own stuff like me, but also some guys with vintage booths, some dig bins. I love a good dig bin. Find something weird from the 80s or 90s.
Yeah. It was cool to go in. I think I go to those regardless of TagFest, what it becomes, or if it stays, that I don't, that part doesn't matter to me as much, but I go to those to see everyone that's there. I think that's the draw for me. It's a quick, I mean, that day it was not a quick drive, but it's usually a quick, like 2 hour drive up and hanging out with people, especially people like Neil who are flying in from Colorado, wherever he's from. And so, yeah, that was cool. It was cool to be a part of. So, I mean, now with the desire to produce the Halloween style toys or the different toys coming up, so we're kind of missing out on other conventions. Tell me about these new projects. Tell me about what's coming up.
Yeah. I've got a few. I've got several things. I've got more projects. So this one has been seen
okay.
on Instagram, but I'll show you some aspects of it that haven't been seen. So this is Dard, which is like the let me put his arms on the, I guess you could say, sister series to Space Creatures.
Okay,
is the Space Raiders.
Man, so your sculpt work is insane.
Thank you, dude. I'll tell you what. I got the original. This is this guy here.
Awesome.
So yeah, I guess that's another thing we haven't really touched on. I do all my sculpting traditionally in clay. I don't do anything digital. I don't do any printing. That's just not what I do as an artist. And I'll tell you what, this guy with all of his right angles, flat surfaces, straight lines has been fun to sculpt, but it has been a journey. I've been working on him. He's at the finish line now, a little bit more refinement.
Okay.
He's got his hands are these little spiky balls.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah. And so here's a little extra bonus I'm doing. I'm designing a second set of hands for him. So he's going to have claws that are articulated, and he's going to have a second set of legs. So the original toy, you can barely see it, but his name is Dard. I don't know if you can see it at all, but it says Dard right there on his crotch.
Yeah.
So on this version with the legs closed in, just like the eraser, I am going to sculpt Dard right here, but then he's going to, so there'll be articulation at the waist. And I'm going to include a second set of legs that doesn't say Dard and has daylight in between it.
Mm-hmm.
So just a secondary display option if you want us to look more like a little eraser. Because it's a little bit goofy that it says Dard on it, but also that's what it is. It's a goofy toy. It comes from something goofy, and I want to honor that.
Yeah.
But I personally would probably display it with this base, a bit more of a standalone, not silly option. So he'll have an extra set of hands and an extra set of legs, so that's a cool feature. I'm the Skinner toy, which I have barely started. I mentioned that earlier. I've got a set. I wanted to do some most of my vinyl stuff is bigger, around 8 to 12 inches. I wanted to do some small ones. I've started posting these on Instagram for October, but I'll show them all to you right here. These are gonna be little 3-inch tall one piece vinyls, so they should be pretty inexpensive to produce and to purchase, and I wanted to make, you know, something a bit more low commitment for the consumer, you know. Rather than thinking, oh, do I want to shell out $100 for this thing? It's like, oh, 20-25, I don't really know what they'll be. But so far I've got eight little Halloween characters.
Oh yeah, these, I did all, see this one.
I just posted this one. Yeah. These are the hard copy prototypes that I'm going to be sending to the factory to get produced. So these are the finished guys.
That's crazy.
Little vampire dude. God. And so these are all inspired by and some parts used from and inspired by old Halloween decorations from the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
The best example here is this little ghost dude.
Oh, the belly on him is perfect.
Yeah. I'll show you what he's based on. And it's pretty much a straight. A lot of people might even recognize this. So there's this cake topper from the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it says, I changed it. I added a little tail to the back of his hood.
Yeah.
I made his belly a little bit bigger and rounder because I think that's such a fun aspect of the sculpt.
I
see that. Yeah. So there's that guy. And the vampire. Here's my devil.
Oh, the devil. Classic.
classic little hooded guy. And then the bass. Well, I wanted to do a little hoof feet.
Yeah.
But I was like, that's too small of a bass. So then I sculpted in a cool little flame.
Awesome.
And nice fat bottom. So that'll be easy to pull out in vinyl.
Yeah.
We've got your classic witch with a little skull in her hand.
It seems like during this time period off of these, like when these existed back in the 80s, it was like when Halloween was trying to be more cutesy a little bit and just give it like a little bit more of a, and it's so good.
Well, I think I oftentimes wonder about that. If like some things are very intentionally cute, but I wonder looking at something, I was like, sometimes when I look at Halloween stuff from the 70s and 80s, I'm like, oh, I'm pretty sure this was just an artist that was phoning something in. Like,
yeah, there is a correlation. And this is going to be like, this is a weird thing. During the 70s, 80s, and very little into the 90s, Satanic Panic, like Dungeons and Dragons, magic. And so to cutesify Halloween things means to garner sales or to say like, no, this isn't demonic.
That's a really good point. I didn't think about it in relation to that. Yeah. So like, you know, if you're going to do a devil and, you know, and my devil definitely looks mischievous, but you wouldn't want to be selling that in 1986 because you're clearly then a cult member of babies. So yeah, that's a really good point. So you make him a bit cute. He's a little cutesy ghost or super, super friendly pumpkin dude. He's not hurting anybody.
No. And the cuter they look, the more innocent it feels. And so people can then say like, oh, this isn't bad. He's cute looking.
And I will say most of my stuff is pretty like playful and friendly.
Yeah.
I'll finish this off real quick. Frankenstein's monster.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a real good one. Anything Frankenstein-esque is so good.
Got a mummy.
Oh, he's so good too.
Little man, eyeball so falling.
You're doing full production of like 9 figures then, right?
Eight so far. I might do 4. And the last one, probably my favorite, is the Grim Reaper.
Oh, he is perfect.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I'm such a sucker for skeleton toys and stuff.
The detail on the back that is my favorite about the Grim Reaper is you can see rib cage.
Thanks. That was very, very, very thought out, obviously. So I appreciate you noticing that.
Wow.
I'm probably going to release them in 2 sets of 4, and I might put together a 3rd set because there's a couple characters, like they're all sort of standard, you know, like your standard Halloween guys, but I don't have a zombie or a werewolf. So I might do a 4th set of 4. And the other two, I have several ideas written down, but it would be a zombie, a werewolf, and then 2 yet to be named. So possibly 3 sets of 4 toys. I'll probably have standard colorways, but then also do some fun marbling and stuff like that. Again, because they're kind of low risk, low commitment, I can say to the factory, like, hey, have some fun. Make some weird color mixes for me. Go wild. You know, send them over. I'll sell them. Whatever.
Yeah, that's awesome. So that's your next big project.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Dard and them, they're off to the factory. Dard is so close to the finish line. And then I'm all doing another series of like micro Sofubi. So I'm calling these ones mini Sofubi.
Okay.
And I'm sculpting another series of micro Sofubis that are about 30 millimeters or 3 centimeters tall. And so here's just two of the bodies I have sculpted for that.
No wait, those are so small, and I love it.
Teeny little dudes, and they'll have fun heads. Here's another one that's, I think this one's really super fun. It's...
Oh.
Little dude driving like a classic Chevy.
Oh, yeah. Those are so good.
Thanks. And again, like super tiny, super easy to deal with. Easy to have fun with, you know, do a quick paint job on and not have it be on $100 toy, you know? Mm-hmm. So I like having different things at different price points, things like that. And, I've got other things on the list to do, other ideas, but those are the ones that are currently underway. And then I've got my other, Gary and Larry, my pumpkin monster toys that, I've had for a few years now.
I'm putting those
on Instagram for the month of October as well.
Holy geez. So you have, I think like you just have no shortage of toy things, which is awesome.
No, it's like, it's honestly like my, for better or worse, it's kind of like the largest thing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something about the pace at which I'm producing stuff, and you're not wrong about that. I'm producing 2 to 2.5 things a year. Whereas most independent people are producing one or fewer things a year, but that's because and this is not me comparing or contrasting for better or worse to anybody else. I'm not really a hobbyist when it comes to this. Like, mm-hmm. this is my full-time thing mixed with my bread and butter is still prop making for film and TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's what keeps the lights on. But my full-time thing is making art, and toys is part of that. So I'm not dipping in and out of it when I have spare time. Like, that is my time.
Incredible. Incredible. Dude, it has been such a pleasure having you on Toys on Tap and talking through your life.
It was so much fun. I wasn't sure what we were going to get into today, but it was a great time kind of going through everything and yeah, going through the history of it.
We have two other segments that come with this. The last one of the episode is plugging everything, new project, all that stuff, where they can get it, website, all that. And then we jump into something called the Nitty Gritty, which is behind, it's a small 10-minute episode behind the Patreon paywall, and it's artist specific. Each artist gets a different question that kind of pertains to the life of their toys. And so let's plug all your stuff, how they can get in touch, where they can get your stuff.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm really easy to find. Everything is Last Resort Toys on Instagram and Facebook. And the website is lastresorttoys.com. The website has a news and blog site, which is, to be honest, if you want the best news, Instagram is your place to go. But there's sort of a history, if you're interested, on the blog, on the website. But most importantly is the store. So you can buy everything that's currently available is always going to be on the website. Sometimes I'll do exclusives with other companies. I've done a couple exclusives with Tenacious Toys, for example, where they might have something in their store that I don't have on my store. But for the most part, you can find everything on the shop. And every once in a while, I'll drop something new in. I usually announce that on Instagram. I rearrange the shop. You know, right now the Halloween stuff's at the top. So if you want to go see what Halloween goodies I've got, it's right there at the top for you. I guess that's about it. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
LastResortToys@gmail.com if you need to get in touch with me personally. Also, I'm pretty good about responding to stuff on Instagram. And I would also recommend, if you do care to be up to date on my stuff, there is a newsletter sign-up form on the website. It's embedded there on the website. Easy peasy, drop your email in there, and I do not spam. 2 to 3 a year is all, and it's only for important stuff, for like a big sale or a new release.
Yeah, awesome, awesome, awesome. Dude, thank you again for coming on Toys on Tap.
Thank you, so much fun.